Want to know our best-kept hosting secrets?
They're all inside our STR Must-Haves Master List, our secret weapon that continues to transform ordinary host into extraordinary host.
The Must-Haves Master List is a checklist that we've been perfecting for over 12 years.
Picture this: your guest checks into your short-term rental, and they're instantly wowed by the thoughtful touches and impeccable amenities. Why? Because you've got the TFE Must-Haves Master List by your side.
This checklist has all the insider secrets that even the best hosts didn't know they were missing.
We challenge you to take the checklist into your property today. See how many items you can mark off of this list. You didn't get them all? No worries. This is your chance to level up. So go to hostchecklist.com and grab your free copy. That's hostchecklist.com to download our coveted checklist today.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hosting hot tip. You know how we're always on the hunt for awesome pieces for our short-term rentals?
Well, we're going to let you in on our secret weapon. It is Manoan. They have steep discounts on over 100 top brands. Think Wayfair, Article, West Elm, Crate & Barrel, Pollywood, Parachute, Velo. The list goes on and on. But these discounts are for hosts and designers for hosts only.
I had my eye on this awesome coffee table from Wayfair, wanting to give our listing that wow factor, but you know us. We are all about having our numbers dialed in and staying budget friendly.
And that's where Manoan stepped in with an awesome discount. And here's the kicker. Becoming a member is totally free. Yes, I said free. F-R-E-E. No cost to join. No monthly membership. It is completely free. But these discounts are exclusive. You do have to be a host or a designer for hosts.
Once you're a member, all you have to do is head to their site, install their browser extension, which makes shopping so, so simple, and purchase and fill your shopping cart in just a few clicks. And it's not just furniture and decor. Restock your most used items anytime you need to refill your supply area.
Exactly. And the best part, again, no catch. There's no fees, nada. Just major discounts waiting for you. Being a Manoan member is like being a VIP host without breaking the bank.
So head on over to ManoanExperience.com. That's M-I-N-O-A-N experience.com. Or just simply click the link in our show notes and sign up and let the savings begin. Hello, listeners. Welcome back for another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for Visiting. Let's start this episode like we do every week, and that is sharing one of you, our amazing listeners, who's using our hashtag #STRShareSunday. We'll share you here on the podcast to our entire email list. Of course, on Instagram on Sunday. Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week, we are sharing at cancast_seaside. Again, that's at cancast_seaside. And they are hosting in New Jersey, Seaside Heights. And two things I want to point out about this property. Number one, at the very end of their highlights, they have their house journey, and I love it because I think they bought an empty lot and built from the ground up. We normally see like renovation projects in the Instagram feed, but I love that they actually showed the ground up new build, which is just as exciting. And then another thing that I love is since this was a new build, you can tell that they were very intentional about there's multiple decks. There's a rooftop balcony, which I think is absolutely lovely. So they just, you know, if you have the luxury of building from the ground up, if you haven't yet, go to all of your competition in the area, scroll through those reviews and see what people are loving and make sure to just stack the love on the property that your building. But I love that they show their house journey, and I love that they have like this triple decker outdoor entertaining area on every level. It's amazing. And they share it. Like, it makes me want to stay there because A, I know it's brand new and clean, and I'm going to have all the views. So well done at @cancast_seaside. So it's never too early to start documenting your journey.
With that, we are going to have a very serious episode today, but it is essential that any short-term rental host or future host listens to this entire episode. Annette, I know there are several moments during our interview where you and I just kind of like looked at each other like, what in the world?
I had to take a little walk around afterwards because
you did.
It was emotional. But I want to share with everybody, like, I get my mind blown like on every episode, I feel like. But Nick shared something that I've never thought about ever. I feel very naive for thinking that I've never thought about worst case scenario. And
just one aspect
I still can't really even wrap my head around this potential financial obligation that I thought the obligation would go away.
Nick, welcome to the show. We would love to kick off the episode with a little background about you and your family. How the heck did you get started in short-term rentals?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Nick Libertine. Me and my wife both live in Northeast Ohio, and we work in healthcare. And we'd wanted to get a vacation place for a long period of time, right? But obviously, it financially wasn't feasible, right, to just buy a place and let it sit there. So her family has a property in Boynton Beach, Florida, which is right near Fort Lauderdale and West Palm area. And so we would travel down there sometimes, and we were like, man, we should really, really do this. I think that we'd be good at it. My wife's really has a really just a knack for kind of interior design. And she, I think, is very just social and very hospitable. And so that's how we kind of came up with the idea. And so we went down to Fort Lauderdale in 2020, I believe, and just started looking at houses. And then once we got the bug, then we're like, all right, we're doing this. So we purchased our first single family home. It was about 2,100 square feet, a mile and a half from the beach in Fort Lauderdale. And that's how we got started in the Airbnb business or vacation rentals, whatever. And so we started that, and it went really well, to be honest. We were paying the bills. We were kind of making money off of it. We had a place to go down once or twice a year with our kids. We have three kids now, 6, 6, and 7. You know, the place had a pool.
Nick, you are busy. You were busy before 2020.
Yeah, my wife's honestly, she takes the brunt of it. She's a saint, you know, dealing with me and my craziness and then the kids and just, yeah, it's a lot. But it was like our dream, right? I mean, you know, we had a place to go down that we could afford because we were renting it out. And, the kids would just like all day in the pool would stay there, you know. We could go down like for spring break with my mom. So it was great. And that's kind of, I guess, how we got started. And we still have that property.
And you were completely remote hosting because you're from Ohio. Mm-hmm. Fort Lauderdale is definitely not a short drive.
No.
Were you nervous at all, you and Monica, when you started hosting? Was that part of the conversation of like, how are we going to do this remotely? Do you have somewhat boots on the ground there? How did you work that out?
Yes, yeah, so we did a lot of research, right? So we listened to a lot of podcasts. We read a couple books, and one of the books in particular actually was it was about long term investing, but it was how to do it remotely. And then I also we own a couple multi units here in Cleveland, and I was thinking to myself that we kind of remotely manage those. I know we live in Cleveland, but when there's a plumbing issue, right? We're not driving to go fix the plumbing issue, right? We're figuring out. We can help fix it and then do that. And then we're very like kind of picture oriented, video oriented. So, hey, what's the problem? Can you take a picture of it? Not only for, for job completion purposes, but also so we have, documentation of what's going on and what needs fixed. So, it sounded like from all these podcasts, right, your cleaner is everything, right? Mm-hmm. As far as boots on the ground. And then as backups, we had, she has some cousins down there. She has a very close family friend down there. So, like absolute worst case scenario, we also had family down there. So I think with that in mind, we felt pretty comfortable Wonderful. Giving it a go, if you will.
I know listeners are going to want to know, what was the book that you read? Because we have a lot of studiers that listen to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was, David Green. And it was, The Secrets to Long-Term or Remote or Long-Term Investing. He's the guy in Bigger Pockets.
Yep.
So that's the book that we read. And it talked more about, actually, I think what we got from that was more the purchasing of the property, like how to work the real estate agent out of state and obviously because we were down there, we put in multiple offers on different properties, going through the inspection. That's really what I think we got a lot out of from that book. And I think almost all of his portfolios, right, or most of it is out of state or not immediately near him.
I want to touch on something you just said, because I think a lot of people glaze over it. So the first property that you ended up purchasing wasn't the first one that you put an offer on, correct? I think a lot of people like to tell just like kind of the highlight reel, but it sounds like maybe you had some other offers on a bunch of other properties before that first one fell through, or you actually got the first one?
Yeah, that's 100%. So we were actually, talk about a rough time to be in the buyer's market. It was May 2020, maybe June. It's somewhere like right after COVID hit, right? And everyone's moving to Florida. And everyone's putting like all cash offers in too, because interest rates are, I don't know what they were, like 2 or 3%, yeah. Whatever. It was absurdly low, right? So it was like a culmination. It was like a hurricane of just like buyers and not a lot of sellers. So we had put multiple offers in. We felt pretty comfortable doing it because we had done it here in Cleveland, which like the market was never as hot here in Cleveland, but just felt comfortable like, hey, we could put an offer on this place. There's a finance or inspection contingency. So we were pretty loose with what we were putting offers on as long as we felt comfortable with the price.
Great. So what happened next? So we have the Fort Lauderdale property. Everything's going well. You're even cash flowing, doing it remotely. What happened next for you?
Yeah, so Fort Lauderdale, I think, was, you know, my wife was really on board with that one because we both love the beach. Well, she doesn't like the beach, but she likes the warm weather. And then it was her family. So there was a lot of positives for that one. So then I've always wanted a mountain house. My uncle had one, an aunt, which we went to as a family a bunch. And I was kind of like, well, hey, this is going really well. We had built up cash reserves. We had, we were doing like everything by the book, right? We had our cash reserves. The rates were still low. And we were kind of looking at places where we could buy a mountain house, because that was one of the things that I really pushed more than she did. So I was like, something I always wanted. I think it'd be great to kind of go hiking. It seemed like a lot of those markets were doing really well, like the Ashevilles, the Gatlinburgs, mm-hmm. the Blue Ridges. I'm sure you guys have talked about all those. That's how she reluctantly said yes. And as you'll find out later in the podcast, probably getting some heat for that now. But yes.
So she
was on board because I was on board. It was very nice of her.
That's what makes a great partnership, right? You give and take a little bit. When was that purchase? The Blue Ridge.
That would have been 2022, I think. So it was almost like just 2 years later, I think. Yeah. So yeah, I'm recollecting because we just did our taxes, and So it would have been May 2022.
Before we get into the depth of the story, like between Fort Lauderdale and Blue Ridge, what was the biggest difference between like a mountain house and the beach house?
This is a great question. Because this is something I grossly underestimated.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and more or less, it's just like a city market or a urban market versus like a rural mm-hmm. undeveloped market. Like for example, you purchase the house, you're right. Okay, we need high speed internet for our guests, right? There's no internet. and you're like, what? There's no internet? Like, are you serious? So we had to get Starlink. Ship that, figure out, install it. Well, first of all, you have to weigh, the different options, which there's not many. There's, I think, like Viastat, some of these other ones, which are really expensive and not very fast, like dial-up speed, basically. We got to get Starlink, and then just, getting contractors, right? You're in Fort Lauderdale, and, Miami's right there, West Palm's right there, Fort Lauderdale's a big city. I mean, there's a plethora of contractors for everything, right? In Blue Ridge, there's like one guy that does that one thing, and he only works Monday through Wednesday.
Right.
It was a learning process. I would say those were the two biggest issues, the internet and really finding like reliable, good contractors. Like we had someone that installed a chandelier that like left halfway through. So we had to get someone else to do it. So that was definitely a challenge at first.
So let's get into the fateful day. Can you walk us through the guest reservation, you know, how everything went down?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'll preface this by, you know, I like to think that we're very, very responsible hosts. So my wife, she screens everyone before they, you know, they stay at either of our properties. We have, I think it's like a 4.98 star and we're like over 100 reviews. We have cameras in the front yard. We have, you know, we have noise monitoring devices. We have all these things. We have fire safe everything, right? We get the chimney inspected, but we'll start, I guess, with that. But the day of, right, it would have been January 4th, 2024. And it was kind of crazy because we just kind of came off a pretty big high. Like 2023 was a great year, right? Revenue was good. The property seemed to be going well. We had really good relationships with our cleaners and people that we work with at both sites. It was just going really well. And then just one of the, like, just an extremely devastating, like, couple weeks. Monica's very close family friend died. And she was actually about to board the plane to Florida to go to the funeral. And then we just got a flurry of calls and texts. So I'm in a meeting, I think, via Zoom. I get like five texts that just says 911, 911. Monica's getting calls. And she's like, what is going on down there? And then, like, our cleaner, who I would actually say we are very close family friends with, right? Like when we go up there, we invite them to dinner. We text about non-business stuff and call each other all the time. They're just great people. They had gone to the site. They were cleaning another cabin and they just saw smoke coming from our cabin. And then they went down there just to check things out. And it was just entirely engulfed in flames. Like the whole thing, like a total loss. The fire they estimated required some absurd amount of gallons of water. Like it was like 100,000 gallons of water to put out. Thank God no one was hurt. No animals were hurt. No people were hurt. But our neighbor, some of his shrubbery got burnt and his house almost got burnt down. It was just, when you guys talk about these things on these podcasts, I thought that's why it was important to tell our story, because imagine the absolute worst thing happening. And this was it, right? I mean, we're crying. Our cleaners were crying. You're like, what do you even do? Like, do I even go down there? Like, what do I even do if I go down there? Do I have to cancel work? Like, it was terrible.
And who was the first person? Was it the cleaner is the first person that had contact with you to let you know what was going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They were kind of around, right? I think it would have been either our cleaner or our neighbor. So our neighbor, you know, it was our video camera footage started to go out, which it honestly isn't that atypical because it's a satellite, right? Yeah. So about once a week, our video footage kind of goes out and it started to go out. I forget what time frame. And we didn't think much of it. And then our neighbor is the one that actually, you know, had called us.
Who called for the fire department and how did that all go down?
So I think our cleaner did. And then it's a very rural kind of fire department, right? Mm-hmm. But first of all and foremost, thank you to them because I think a lot of them are volunteer firefighters. They came up there and they put out the fire. And I mean, like they obviously risked their life. Like it was a massive fire. If anyone's interested in the show notes, I can show you pictures, but it was just entirely, because it was a wood cabin, right?
Right.
So once like any fire hits anything, it's just entirely engulfed in flames.
What time of day was this, Nick?
So this would have been midday. And so somewhere between 11:30 and 2:30.
And it was a weekday? Okay.
No, I'd have to look back. January 4th. I don't know. I imagine I was on a work call, so I would assume it was a weekday, yeah.
And were the guests, was this the middle of their reservation?
It was.
When did you have initial contact with the guests that were staying? Not initial contact, but after the fire and then also Airbnb. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we called the guests immediately when we had heard from, you know, Shane and Jordan, which are our cleaners. And by the way, if anyone is in the Blue Ridge area and needs, you know, handyman or contractors or cleaners, they are phenomenal. Their name's Jordan and Shane Ware. And obviously, they're hurting because we were a big part of their business. So, you know, we could maybe, put in the show notes or all something, but yeah.
Yes.
That, so I don't even know where I was. Oh yeah. So we called the guests. It was a very brief conversation, mostly for legality reasons, right? Like it was, I think that they were kind of guarded once they had fit, because I think Jordan and Shane had called them first and they really said, there was nothing that, that we did that would have caused the fire. And it was a bizarre interaction is what I would say. It was very brief, and then I just wanted to make sure that they were okay and that their animals were okay. And that's kind of how that, and then really we haven't had contact with them since.
Okay. Do you have a fire? So, did you have a fireplace in the home?
Yeah. So I don't know if you want, as part of the story, do you want me to, we could tell you kind of the facts, or do you want to go through the interaction with Airbnb or?
Yeah. Why don't you share with us the facts that you're able to share and then take us into just kind of what happened next, both with Airbnb, since I'm assuming that they booked through Airbnb and then, I'm sure that'll unfurl a bunch of other questions, but why don't you start there?
I'm sure. Well, it was I guess the first thing I'm going to preface this with, I don't want to vilify Airbnb. We still have one of our listings on there. I think it's a great platform for, screening tenants. I think it is the most popular platform. So I think that you kind of have to have it in your wheelhouse if you're going to rent your property out. And for the most part, right, for some of these minor issues, I feel like they're pretty responsive. We haven't had an issue really up to this point with anything with Airbnb. So I do want to preface everything with that. But I will say, so kind of here were the facts of the events preceding the fire. From, I believe, the fire report that was done by our cause of origin specialist. So in case anyone wonders, when your house burns down in flames, you have lots of cause of origin specialists, which is basically these people that try to figure out what happened. That's what their job is. They're very good at it. Here were the objective. There's a lot of subjective things that I'd like to say, but the objective things, there was a conversation between our cleaner and the guest that their 8-year-old son was poking coals at the fire, in which we do have, I guess I should start. We do have a fireplace enclosed in the back porch. So it's one of those where it's covered in stone, right? We had a crate. We had the chimney inspected. We have all the fire safe precautions. We were kind of OCD about that stuff, but that, what I guess the questionable cause of origin, although it was never conclusively breached that was the cause. So anyway, just prior to them going on a hike, the son was, I guess, poking coals in the fire. Apparently they were quote unquote cool, but that was the story that they had given our cleaners. Some of the neighbors had said that they had maybe heard some noises later in the evening, the night prior, pretty late, like 2 or 3 in the morning. And, that was all hearsay, though. But at 11:30 a.m., we have video footage of them leaving the property. They were going on a hike. And then by 2:30, we start seeing signs of smoke coming from the house from our neighbor's camera. So by that time, you could kind of presume that the house was pretty well in flames. Also, the weather report for that day showed that there were 20-mile-per-hour winds. If you can imagine, a fire and wind and obviously coals, things like that. And then the other kind of evidence that the cause of origin kind of investigator, it said is, what were the alternatives, right? And the two big ones being electrical, right? Or gas. I think they ruled out gas or said it was highly unlikely. Electrical, they weren't definitively able to rule out. However, we just bought the house a year or so prior, right? A year and a half ago, and got a full point electric inspection. I called the electrical company. There was no outages or excess energy that they had seen, and none of our neighbors had any electrical issues that day.
Nick, who hires the cause of origin investigator? Is that insurance? Is it the city? Where does that the cause of origin person come into play?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a fire chief inspection, right? So for any one of these massive fires, there has to be like a city or state inspector that kind of evaluates and really makes sure there's no like criminal activity, right? So there's that, right? You have like the state or the city or whoever's in charge of doing more of the, regulatory stuff. They still look for a cause of origin, but really the cause of origin specialist is going to be through your insurance company, right? So my insurance was proper. I called them. Like they had, because they obviously want to get to the bottom of what happened for me, but also for them, right? To see if they have like basically grounds to go after whoever. So yeah, that's, in our case, that's who went out to the site. But then also Air Cover had their own cause of origin investigator as well. So.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So what's next?
Yeah. So unfortunately, right, when, you know, truth be told, when a house is entirely burnt down in flames, no one finds a cause of origin, right? Because all of these cause of origin inspectors, right, they're held to a certain standard. So kind of like, I guess, anyone else, like a, you know, a doctor or a lawyer would be, they have to say, you know, hey, with like utmost certainty, this was the cause of origin of the fire, right? Like there was a toaster that is entirely burnt, or there was, I don't know, like something that they can, and a lot of times, right, the house is like half burnt down or only a room is, so they're able to definitively say that. But in our case, it was entirely engulfed in flames and there was nothing left. Mm-hmm. So they inferred, right, like causality, but you know, they basically said, we can't definitively say what was the cause of origin. With that being said, you as the viewers and podcast hosts, I mean, what were the alternatives, right? I mean, you have someone leave at 11:30. You know, apparently the sun was poking coals just prior to leaving. By 2:30, it's engulfed in flames. And then it was windy. And then you look at the other alternative cause as well. Was it electrical? I mean, could be, but there was no electrical issues preceding this and we had an inspection. So you start kind of going down the list and you're like, man, I mean, it really see, you know, I mean, I'll let the viewers and the, you know, everyone else kind of insinuate what they think was the cause. I certainly have my thoughts. Yeah.
Sure.
I heard you say when you started to tell the story, like there's obviously shock involved. There's like there were tears involved. And it sounded like you and your wife were not together at this time. So can you share with us kind of emotionally, what was going on? And did you guys end up going down? And what was that initial, you know, if this does happen, I know you're like, what happens when your house burned down? Can you just share kind of what those next steps are for you and your wife consuming what's happening on the property?
Yeah. I mean, it was financially and emotionally devastating. And we can go, if you want to, I mean, I don't know, we could probably go into insurance stuff later. And I think that's really important to learn from this. I mean, we were both like, crying, you know, she had to go to a funeral, right? And like, it was a very close friend, family friend of theirs. So like, I kind of like said, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to stay here? And then I was like, I'm not going to go down. We have kids. Like, what am I going to do if I go down there? Like, the house is, if there was something to fix, I would go down there, but this is just like ashes, right? So we just decided to stay here and try not to like let it regulate our kids' lives and took the kids to soccer practice or whatever, but it just didn't, I didn't sleep for like a couple weeks. But like it really, it affected our marriage too, inadvertently, right? Because yeah, I mean, I really pushed to get this property. I thought it was, you know, I thought we were like building our lives and, you know, and for a while it was working that way. But then all of a sudden, right, you go from a property that's cash flowing where, you know, it seems like everything's going well and you don't think things can go wrong to not only are you not cash flowing, but you're having to now pay a mortgage. And then all of these other things just start adding up. Okay, well, you have to get the site cleaned up, right? Well, like, does insurance cover that? Okay, well, how much do they cover? Like, well, they don't cover the full amount for that, right? Okay, well, can you just sell the plot of land? Well, yeah, but plots of land don't really sell for that much in that area, right? And then who also like wants to have an uncleaned up site? And then also we had to get rid of the foundation, which is like an extra cost, right? Because you can't like just leave the foundation there. So you have to like excavate it. Yeah, it was terrible. Like, I don't want to scare any listeners because like we still like our vacation rentals and stuff, but it was, I mean, it is one
it
of
was
the worst.
It was worst case scenario. It was it the was. Worst. You had worst case scenario. I'm gonna ask my like ignorant questions right now. Like, what does happen with the mortgage? Like, the house isn't there, and you just have to continue to pay this, or is there some sort of like, you know, that insurance can cover that for you because there isn't a property there? Where does insurance start to kick in for you? And I don't know all of that you can share, but what were those next steps with insurance? Like, I'm sure that's the scurry immediately, is to get in contact with your insurance company and start that. But like those six things that you just said, like site cleanup, mortgage, like the land, like who was your trusted partner in this to walk you through this? Is it your agent? Is it, you know, we've just had an insurance like public adjuster on with us. Can you share with us who was your confidant? Who was your consultant during all of this?
So first of all, I would say that I appreciate, this is where I would say that a big shout out to you guys. And there's a couple other podcasts about this kind of stuff because, you know, and actually it was, I think it was about 1 year past the day we bought the house where I was listening to someone's podcast and essentially it was like, hey, you need to make sure you have the right insurance, right? And we switched to short-term rental insurance on this property. And then also had the loss of business income rider, which if you do not have that, unless you have a massive, you know, nest egg or reserve, I would highly, you know, just so we had proper. And I honestly can't say enough about proper throughout this entire. So anyone that doesn't know what proper insurance is, they are an insurance company that does do short-term rentals. His name's Chad. I don't know what his last name is. He was phenomenal. Like I called him the day of. He was just like, listen, this is devastating. You know, here's everything you're entitled to. Like, just let me know when you want to have it. And so we had loss of revenue income, excavation, cleanup. And then like we had, I think it was like 3/4 the cost of the house. So still like devastating. It was a big house, right? It was, you know, it was, I don't know, like $700,000 or $800,000. It was a big cabin, right?
Yeah.
So, but I guess this is a good learning point too, to really look into what you're signing when you're signing these contracts, right? It was like, I didn't look too much into some of this stuff, but for example, like just look at your portfolio and say, hey, if X house burns down right now, or just the worst thing happens, hurricane, whatever, you know, natural disaster, something happens with a guest, how am I covered? Because like, for example, right? I mean, you start looking at this stuff. Okay, how much is your loss of business revenue, right? Ours is capped. So, you know, it was like probably $10,000 less than we made in 2023, which is still a good money. And I think it's going to help pay the mortgage. Mm-hmm. So that's good. But how much is it, right? They have caps on each of these things, right? We have an excavation cap of like $10,000. So it costs $30,000 to excavate the property, right? Like it was just a massive cabin that burnt down and it was like in the mountain. So these are things that you, when you start talking about reserve, like either you need to have reserves for to bridge that delta or like, you know, overinsured, I guess. It's just stuff that the things we did right, what is, we got the right insurance, right? We got loss of business revenue, things like that. I would have looked more into what each of those caps are now that I've been through this.
Nick, let's mm-hmm. stop right there though, because you can help like tons of other people that are listening. So you said one thing that you would have you would do, if you could do it again, would review all of the caps, correct? Like you were saying, the exactly. excavation cap, the business loss of business cap, all of those things you would have reviewed a lot more closely.
Exactly. So like, you know, I mean, I think in our scenario, the loss of business revenue cap was pretty good, right? But like, I'm just imagining, like, let's just say you make $90,000 in a property per year and you do that and you have to pay X, Y, and Z and all these, you know, let's say you have a pool or a hot tub and I don't know, all these things, right? And then all of a sudden something catastrophic happens and you're out of commission for 6 months. And then your cap's like, I don't know, $30,000 or $40,000 or something like that. Like, I guess I would just say, think about these kind of things, right? Because they, you know, you always think, oh, worst case scenario won't happen. Well, here, I'm on this podcast right now and it didn't happen. So, you know, it's very real. It is very, you know, especially if you're in, I would say, I don't know, areas like mine, right? I mean, if you're out west, I know that wildfires can be a thing, right? If you're down south and you're near a beach, hurricanes are a thing. Like, the very, very real things that you should envision. What would happen if today this just catastrophic thing happened? Do you have the reserves? Are you adequately insured? Yeah.
Sarah.
What?
I want you to take a guess how much we are going to spend this year on Airbnb and Vrbo fees.
Oof. I feel like I should know this number off the top of my head.
It's okay. Just make a guess.
$16,000, $17,000.
Wrong. Over $50,000.
What?
Yes, I'm on Hostly's direct bookings ROI calculator right now, and I plugged in our stats, and yes, based on the number of bookings we anticipate for this year, that's how much Airbnb is going to charge us for fees.
That's crazy.
I know, but I've got some good news for you. Since we use Hostly as our property management software, the calculator is letting us know if we continue to improve our direct booking strategy, we can save over $15,000 per year.
Wow, that is good news. Plus, we know this. When we make it our goal to improve our direct bookings with Hostly, we will have more control over our cancellation policies, guest database, and our overall branding differentiation in this crazy growing industry.
Yes, plus our bottom line.
Yeah.
So listeners, please give Hostly's direct booking ROI calculator a try for yourself. And we bet you'll be excited to learn more about Hostly's award-winning property management software and their integrated, built-in, out-of-the-box, completely customizable direct booking site for your hosting business.
And thanks for visiting, listeners. Get $100 off when they use code TFV100 at checkout. That's right. Use code TFV100 when signing up for Hostly's property management software to get $100 off. What happens with the mortgage too, Nick? So we understand the loss of revenue, the excavation, but you're still paying this mortgage. What would you, could you change anything if you go back in time with how to handle this hefty mortgage that you are responsible for?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that I don't know if you can change, right? I mean, if you have a mortgage on your properties and if you want to keep it, there's a couple options through our mortgage company. They were great. We essentially sent a letter saying this was an extraordinary circumstance. And there are all mortgages companies have extenuating circumstance like clauses where you can send in, you know, what happened, why temporarily are you going to be unable to pay your mortgage? And then it goes through, like, you have to, you know, go say your income, why this was like catastrophic, all that kind of stuff. And then it does hurt your credit score a bit, right? So you take a bit of it's not a crazy hit on your credit. Like, I think it's a soft credit pull, but it, you know, it's real. And then they can approve it or not approve it. So we fortunately got approved, right? So like the first 2 or 3 months, we were just paying out of pocket on this mortgage on this property that didn't exist, which sucked. But then we have, I think, a 3 to 4 month waiver right now. So that was very nice of them, to be honest. They didn't have to do that. So now we have like 3 to 4 months where it's like, we're not paying a mortgage on that property and then it'll start a reset.
What is the plan then? I want to make sure we leave time to get into air cover, but what is the plan, or do you have one as of right now with what you want to do with the property? What path did you choose to take?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think our property at the time, there were lots of land in that area like you would lose money if you just sold the plot of land, is essentially. So you have to, we kind of walked through it. We were like, what are our options? Which also, again, just like back to the devastation, we put money into this house. We furnished the house. This was like our baby, right? Everyone on this podcast, right, has some interest in a short-term rental. So it's like all of these things, right? Like the artwork and like the hot tub and like just some of the stuff in the basement, like the, you know, the pool. So like all of it's gone. But, anyway, so like that finance, right? That money is just gone, right? You're not getting that back. But, you know, but then you're starting thinking like, well, okay, like even if we get the insurance money and even if we sell the plot of land, we may still be in, still owe the mortgage company money, right? Like if the plot of land doesn't sell for what you want it for. So then we're like, we kind of have to build is what we came to the realization, which honestly, there was one other podcast I listened to. I think it was like, Avery Carl's podcast. And someone said the same thing, really, like that you just, it's really hard to just sell a plot of land. I mean, you can do it, but you're probably going to lose money. Right. People just want to buy a house, right? They don't want, most people, right? There's more of a market for that.
Mm-hmm. Oof. So what I'm hearing is you're still on the hook then for this, is it a 30-year mortgage, I assume?
Yeah. 100%.
So you're on, whether the house is there or not, you'll get a portion, let's say 75% of it, to pay it down, but you're still on the hook for this mortgage, even though the property isn't there.
Very much so, yes. And then just, I mean, the little things too, that you, back to making sure you're adequately insured, right? Our furnishings, we had, I don't know, yeah, let's say $80,000 worth of furnishings, like TVs. That place came with a hot tub. The previous owner was a phenomenal person. He, like a lot of the beds were custom, just custom made woodwork, all gone. And then, so they have a cap, but back to my point, they have a cap on furnishings, right? So like your furnishings cap was like $30,000, you know, that's,
yeah,
that hurts, right?
Right.
So the one other thing that I did want to cover too, I mean, I know you got, we're on a time limit, but it's just the relationship too with the neighbors and the community, right? Like we were kind of painted as like irresponsible hosts.
Oh no.
Because even though the cause of origin, right, it wasn't definitive. I mean, you can, everyone can kind of see the facts of the case and make their own insinuations, but I can tell you certainly the neighborhood did. We had neighbors that had come over for, you know, a drink previously when we would go up. You know, we just had a really good, we had a text chain of just like, you know, we'd kind of joke around about things and just, I feel like ostracized. So yeah, the HOA almost tried to ban short-term rentals. So a lot of the other owners weren't a big fan of me or my wife. I think someone at some point said they were like happy the house burnt down. Oh. It was brutal. Just, yeah. So it ruined a couple of those relationships up there. It's been, yeah, just back to kind of that emotional distress point. I won't hammer it too much, but it was really rough. So much so that we're like, you know, I don't even know if we build, if we'll probably just sell it because we feel like some of those relationships have just been devastated to a point of like no return.
Gotcha.
No, that's that's an important message too. Like that's something, a side effect from the fire that I would not have anticipated at all is I would think compassion, but it sounds like it's the exact opposite of that from some of the neighbors. But oof.
Nick, let's dive into air cover. Annette and I have been, and actually, listeners, we don't know what Nick is going to share with us about air cover, first of all. But I can say that we have been very passionate about educating people and understanding that air cover is not, you know, your insurance company that has a claim or a policy within your name and to make sure that you are properly insured. But I think a lot of people, I still hear it where people don't, they say they don't have insurance because they have air cover. So Nick, what has that experience been like? Would you agree with that statement and share with us what you can that's been going on between you and the department behind air cover?
Yeah. So all those things you just said are extremely insightful points that I cannot emphasize enough being through this. So air cover is not insurance. It's not, they will say that when you're going through the claim, like it's in there somewhere in the, I don't know, very long document. It is like a service they provide hosts is what I would say it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's not insurance or certainly that's what I've been told. So I don't want to get into the legalities of things, but I that's what I have been told in the last 3 to 4 months. So there is a cap on it. It's $1 million. But if you think that you are going to be able to get reimbursement from air cover, I would caution you and say, based off my interactions, that you need to have very substantial proof that whatever damage was the guest's. First and foremost, you need to have short-term rental insurance if you're renting your house out, I would say. Like that is a 100%. You cannot 100% rely on air cover because it's not, I don't want to say it's not going to cover you, but it, look at my scenario is what I would say, mm-hmm. Right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, this goes back to just the importance of documenting everything, right? Like my circumstance is extreme, right? I mean, it's not going to happen to everyone. But, you know, if something might happen to your house where it's $20,000, $25,000, like, you know, like, so what I would say is really work with your cleaners on like, you know, a process and documentation of things when like, you know, the house is left to the next guest, things like that. Document the last time you cleaned things. Like if you have a fireplace, when was the last time you cleaned the chimney? If there has been any like electrical issues in the house, like you better document, you know, like heck that you've fixed them, right? Because these are all things that came up and have come up in my conversation with them. So I'll leave it at that. But the biggest lesson out of all this is they are not, it is not an insurance company, right? An insurance company, when you file a claim, right? Like my home insurance has to cover me, right? Now, whether they find a cause of origin or not, unless like I was the one that burnt down the house. So like they didn't find a definitive cause of origin, but they still have to cover me, right? That's not how air cover works. That's all I'll say about that.
And yeah. I have a question about future bookings. Did you have to reach out to them? Did Airbnb say, we'll reach out to these guests on your behalf? What happened to your future reservations?
Yeah, they were pretty good about that. Yeah, they were okay. Like catastrophic, occurrence. We just said, hey, like, we have no house for you to stay at. And I think we only had, two or three reservations, okay. I think. That was something that they got their money back and okay. moved on with life.
And so. you were the ones that had to contact them for that?
I think we did.
Okay.
We did. I think Airbnb helped though. Like they sent him a message and then we just said, hey, just if you need anything, we're so sorry this happened. I think one couple was like their anniversary or something. And you're like, oh man,
right.
Sorry.
And with a catastrophic event like this, did you get an actual person at Airbnb, like a one-to-one contact, like direct line? I know that's always beef with everyone is there really isn't a representative, but something like this, did you have that one source of truth, one person that you could contact, or was it always calling in general to just Airbnb?
Yeah, I would say here's my advice on that we got a lawyer and, Chad from our proper intern said it's just better to communicate with them. It sounds like via email or messaging. Okay. So I would just say that's my advice because you just get kind of, it's just like any other big company with calling someone over the phone. I feel like it's just better. And then it also is like a paper trail if there is anything later on. So the answer, I guess, is no. I did not get a primary contact from Airbnb until later on. Like I kept emailing over and over and over and over again because it was months. It took, I think, 4 months until January 4th, January. So it would have been, I guess I stand corrected. Maybe at least 3 months before we had gotten a ruling on whether they were going to cover it or not. So I was I was emailing every week, basically Airbnb, just saying, hey, just looking for an update. And we finally did get someone who was responding that consistent. But just so everyone knows, the way it works in some of these bigger losses, they outsource to an actual kind of insurance company to do the work, to get their own cause of origin investigator. So that you're really working with this, let's just call it insurance company X, right? Who does what an insurance company would do otherwise, talk about all the collectibles you had in the house, talk about the value of the house, get their own cause of origin investigator. So that, I did have a primary contact for that.
From a third party
they didn't work for Airbnb. They worked the work was outsourced to them. They worked for X and X insurance company.
Okay. And I don't know if you're allowed to talk about the air cover at all. So it sounds like you're still trying to working with both your insurance company and air cover for the final results of how you're going to be.
Well, yeah, I think I can talk about the initial ruling. It was denied.
Okay.
So it was felt that there wasn't substantial enough evidence for them to help cover.
Okay. So at this point in time, $0.
Zero.
Okay.
Yes.
Oof. This is, been a lot. Where are you today, Nick? You and Monica, your wife, which we're hopefully she can join us maybe when you rebuild, but where are you at today? Is the cleanup happening? Is the city on top of you to get that cleaned up? Where are you currently in the rebuild or the healing phase, I guess we'll call it?
Yeah. So the cleanup's done, which is good. We have I think it's like a civil engineer. So it's a mountain-based property, right? So it's like on a slope. So you have to get a civil engineering firm to, essentially say, hey, this is where you can build and this is how big you can build it. And this is what gradient you have to build it at, all those kind of things. So that we're in the process. I think in the first or second week of May, they come out and then we'll hopefully start building. We've got the plans submitted to the county. So which are being approved, the septic and stuff like that. And then, we're going to submit the plans to our HOA and hopefully if there's no barriers there, we'll start building sometime, I guess, early summer. So that's where we're at. Yeah.
If the entire mm-hmm. Thanks for Visiting community could, wrap their arms around you guys, what would you want? Nice. Well, I want this to be as not as woo-woo as possible because I'm not woo-woo person, but truly, is it just everyone checking their insurance coverage? What could we, as a community of short-term rental hosts, obviously be compassionate where your neighbors were not? What could we do for you?
Yeah, I mean, I Here's what I would say is I would say that like you can still be obviously I'm biased when I'm saying me and my wife, but I think my wife does the brunt of it. And she, I think, was an extremely responsible host. And like, just thinking that that's good enough sometimes isn't enough in like asset protection. So yeah, I would say right now, after this episode, everyone call your insurance company and say, hey, if my house were to, like the worst catastrophic thing were to ever happen, what would it look like? And then really going through each of those cost items and then making sure you feel comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And like financially saying, okay, like, because a lot of people too, I mean, you know, I guess we're not younger couple anymore. We're like a middle-aged couple. But you know, we're not extremely well off. We're not the latter, but like, I mean, some people might have a lot of cash reserves and they're comfortable with that. But if you are like us and you weren't, then that's something you should either develop cash reserves or insure more. It's one of the two, right?
Right.
So I will say a big shout out to Proper Insurance. If anyone is interested in getting them, they were very receptive. No ifs, ands, or buts about getting the money and like working with us and yeah, and just everything. So,
and we will have Proper in the show notes, but don't be upset if Proper doesn't insure you just because they have
they have
certain areas, certain things, certain maxes. So just want to put that there that it's not a free for all that they're just going to approve everyone. But
no, but we appreciate that, Nick, because we have used Proper for years and they are, I mean, I would even call them friends of ours at this point. So we will be sure to put their link in our show notes. And it's lovely to hear, obviously this is not sponsored or affiliated with Proper, this conversation with Nick. And so Nick, it's nice, I think, for our listeners to hear that you had a great experience with them, because Annette and I could say it, other thought leaders in the space can promote that, but it's nice to hear that they live up to their reputation.
And the business side of it. I think a lot of hosts don't think about that business loss of income.
Right.
That's one of those things where people are talking about air cover or just in general. It's like, well, what if the income went to absolute zero? You know, it's not just your cash flow, it's zero. And so
zero, and there's no asset to sell or to rent out.
Right. Oh my gosh. You're painting like the exact picture of what we're
So that's when you're talking about risk. Like that's the risk of like, it's not only because a lot, we talk about it with property a lot, like, and Sarah and I are at fault for that. Like worst case scenario, when we're doing the math, like we just resell the property. Well, there's nothing to even resell here. Or we're like worst case scenario, we go to midterm, worst case, we go to long-term. Like you have nothing to sell and you're still responsible for the mortgage. I don't know what I was thinking where like the mortgage just went away if the house went away. Like I really thought that. I don't know what I was thinking. So
no, because I think worst case scenario for a lot of investors in real estate can go in so many terrible ways, right? Like there's lots of different worst case scenarios from squatters to flooding to hurricanes. And so it's really tough to wrap your head around how do we protect ourselves from all the worst case scenarios? And like you said, Nick, it's either having a ton of cash reserves or over-insuring and not just getting insurance and calling that like a done deal, but really understanding, I just did this with our properties of no, like if it disappears, like what happens? How much do I get? And you feel, and I don't know about you, because they send you your policy and it's this big stack of papers and half of it you don't understand. I was literally copying and pasting in ChatGPT and I'm like, explain this to me in layman's terms. So the amount of emails that went back between me and my broker were, but I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to ask them, I was like, tell me like I'm 5 years old. Like, what cash will you send me? And I think that's what, as investors, we have to, and now I'm going to go back today and even ask again. Like, so, because Nick, you've reignited a fire in me and that's, and I think you can give that back to our community, which we really appreciate you sharing the story. Because I mean, it has not been that long. It's only April 29th today. We're recording this.
And I have a final question, Nick, because you reached out to us. What was that with, this is a tragedy. Like, what was it inside of you that was like, I want to share this story? Because I know there's other listeners that have a story, not like this, but something, it could be actually a win, a huge win or a huge loss. But what was that inside of you that was like, you know what, I'm going to take some time out of my schedule, email the ladies at Thanks for Visiting and share my story. I just kind of want to get through, like, why was that important to you? I'm interested in that.
I think the biggest thing for me, right, is I was like, okay, what good can come from this? Because it's just been a rough 2024, right? In general. And I'm like, well, okay, I've gained so much from all of these podcasts. I can't thank you guys enough. I've learned so much in this space from this and take like just to even compartmentalize what happened here and then what, and then our other, even before this property, you know, when we had this one and obviously Fort Lauderdale, we wouldn't have been able to do it without your guys' education. And I feel kind of like remiss if I'm not giving back to that and something good's not coming out of this. And I just hope it never happens to anyone else. And I was like, well, if someone else can learn from this just really crappy situation, then I mean, it's a win for someone, right? And that's kind of why I emailed you guys. And I think it's important. I think it's important to understand what air cover is, what kind of insurance you need, and to think worst case scenario, because you know, you think it's not going to happen. And then next thing you know, you're on a podcast telling people about how your house burned down.
Right.
So we're
super thankful for that. And listeners, if you hopefully take action today, like do the homework of looking at your policy, email us, let us know, and we can share that with Nick. And if any of the listeners uncover things about their policy that might have been hidden or they didn't know, also please reach out to us. Like, we are on the other end of this email. That's why Nick is on today, because he reached out to us. So if anything comes from this for any of you, please reach out. Let us know for sure.
Nick, are you comfortable with people have a question, or would you prefer they just contact Proper and see what they can offer them? Usually at this point in the podcast, we say like, you know, contact their guest if you have questions, but I'm not sure how you feel about that.
Yeah. I mean, me and my wife are kind of an open book. So yeah, we have... I guess, do you guys have show notes? Because I know that
we have an
Instagram, and we have like our direct booking website, and then we have like a Facebook page. So we still have our Fort Lauderdale property, and who knows what we'll do with this Blue Ridge property. Maybe we will rent it. Obviously, if we're open, but if we can help anyone out in any way, just let us know. Even if you want to share a similar story, or if you have questions, I'm happy to answer. I'm not an expert. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an insurance professional, but I can certainly just kind of go off what I've learned in this process and what we've learned. So happy to help anyway.
Perfect. Awesome. With that, we will put all of Nick's information in the show notes. If you're traveling to Fort Lauderdale, I know we could support them by staying at their amazing property. With that, I am Sarah Karakhan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros, is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.